Oh, you've got a question here. Is that you? Did you write? You got the question about the bosal.
The bosal, yeah. So, Carson
Optrans
issue. Yeah, transitioned him into a bosal because. Trying different bits out with him. He's been a performance horse like for 13 years, and I've had him for 2 years now. And when I'm riding with contact, because I'm doing cowboy dressage, so I need to have soft feel and contact. And he trots around or whatever with his mouth gaping open. So I've started him like just in a rope halter, and then I've transitioned him to the bosal, and he's really very comfortable with that. He's giving me soft contact and soft feel, but I've lost my bend in my circles. So he's to the outside rein.
So bosals are one of the tricky ones. So a lot of people ride young horses in bosals, but the catch is you can get a fair brace in them, especially laterally. I would tend to recommend a softer bosal. If you do have if you're riding in a bosal, if you've got a sort of fairly hard rigid, g'day Sue. if you've got a fairly, if you've got a fairly rigid bosal,
I put him in my what they call the training bosal, which is the really quite big, heavy, thick one. I do have a medium size one, and I also have a pencil, a Bosalito as well, which I rode my standard bred in when he was quite apt. So do you think the big training one would be too heavy for him?
Yeah, possibly too heavy. I got a little sort of rawhide Bosal I use. It's just a little, like some would call it, a little hackamore, and it was just made out of a bit of old twisted rawhide rope, and it's kind of quite soft. You oil it up and it gets quite soft, and I tend to some horses, I go back to a halter and they're actually softer in the halter than the bosal, purely because the bosals are quite firm and hard on them, and I would tend to use a bosal that tends to sort of flex a little more than one that doesn't flex, because some horses get quite sensitive to it, so you'll feel that they'll bend away from it, so you'll feel like you're getting a soft feel, as in your horse is giving in the head and the jaw, I suppose it's only just releasing itself off the pressure a little bit. That's what I'd say is probably happening. And if you go to a softer, sort of more flexible type bosal, then it'll cover a little bit more surface on your horse when you put pressure on, and it won't be so sensitive on them, which means you can play around with it a little more. But the thing is the reality with the bosal, if I was just to use my mobile phone as an example, is if that's the base of the bosal there where your knot is, where your reins are picking up from, if you want to pull that way, which means you want your horse's head to go that way, yeah?
Yeah.
What's going to happen is you're going to pull that way and the bosal twists that way. You understand? Yeah. So the nose, whatever it is, twists in the wrong direction that you want your horse to bend. And that's why people have so much trouble sort of in a bosal getting a brace in the jaw. So because the knot picks up in a certain way, when you lift up your reins, you're going to get a nice bend like this, but they'll get locked in that bend because when you pull this rein, it twists that way when you want your horse to twist that way. So the difference in a side pull, say, for instance, if you're riding in a side pull, if you want your horse to bend that way, the side pull also twists that way, whereas a bosal twists the opposite way. So when you've gone from a snaffle bit, when you pick up a snaffle bit, you pick up the rein on the left, like the left rein, and you're going to touch the left-hand side of the body first because it touches the left side of the mouth, okay, which means you're going to get the horse going, oh, something's happening on the left. But with a bosal, you're going to get that sort of twist in the wrong direction. Now, it takes a lot of subtle little gentle lifts of the rein to get the horse to get interested in that side and then follow a bend. If you just try and sort of turn them like your horse is used to, it'll brace. So what I would suggest is maybe going back to a sort of a halter that fits well, like a nice rope halter that fits well, because that's going to be the closest thing to a bosal, but it's very, very flexible. But obviously too loose is too not clear enough. and you just start to ride your horse in the halter and just start to get it to pick up a feel on the left. But when you pick up your left and right rein, you have to be very specific in the sense that what I would do is, because a bosal, you ride, you loosen on the reins and the knot drops and the horse feels the pickup when you pick up the rein, okay? So when you pick up a left rein, you deliberately pick up a left rein and lift it up beside the horse's neck so the horse can feel the left rein lifting. And then you're hoping that that horse will flick its thoughts to the left and flick an ear to the left. And then when its thoughts to the left, then you just say, why don't you follow a feel to the left? And you might do that in a halter for a little while just to get your horse interested and then bending to the left, because that heavy bosal might be just a bit much to make it just lock down and you sort of miss your opportunity. But you have to almost go from quiet. With a bosal, you have to be very quiet. You have to be very, like, when you're riding and you loosen the reins, you have to have very quiet. You got to give a droop in the rein. So every time you touch your rein, the horse goes, oh, you're touching the left rein or you're touching the right rein. If you're riding with contact and a little too noisy, then your horse will just get locked in that bend and you'll miss those opportunities for it to think over to the left to even get a bend. So you go from nothing to something.
Then the bits, a bit also that's got a very small port in it, but it's independent, so you can work the reins independently of one another. It's got the swivel in it.
Yeah, well, most bit. So something that you can work the reins independently is good, because by the sounds of it, your horse needs a little more time in something that is going to get it to bend and sink into the corners better, opposed to get it to corner, give you that sort of, drop in the head kind of thing. And by the sounds of it, your horse is not giving you collection anyway, but if it's locking in that bend, it's probably only just hiding from the nose bend from the bosal.
Yeah.
If you rode in a snaffle for a while or a side pull or something like that, you'd get that sort of lateral bend back in your horse. So it's not a bend, it's more of the horse's thinking and loosening up and balancing to the left with its thoughts, so its body follows its thoughts, yeah? So you get a natural bend. And you might have to...
Rode him today. I was trying to be a little more obvious with the left rein, but I was also trying to use my inside, my left, my leg behind, at number three position to say put your back, leg under further to bend your body, because he's been ridden so straight for so long.
Yeah.
And that every time I put the inside leg on to get him to come around my leg, he'd think I was asking him to go faster.
Yeah, and that's the problem with legs. Is 90% of horses think legs still mean accelerate. And so I don't ride horses for a fair while with any one leg at a time. I just say legs mean accelerate and reins mean balance. And once you get a horse looking into a turn, you don't need any inside leg on your horse, because your horse will bend naturally and make the right shape. It's just you got to work on a little... like corners and stuff where you come up, walk up to a corner, get your horse thinking and go around the corner, and then the horse looks and thinks around the corner and just get it to loosen up, and then even do like a circle where the horse comes around a circle and rides out in a straight line and work on getting the horse, because every time you put more acceleration in, you put a little more anxiety in your horse too sometimes, and that will still put a little more brace in the rein. So oftentimes people might think they're trying to bow their horse around their leg or something like that, but what happens is they're accelerating their horse, but also they're putting more brace in the rein, because that acceleration is going to go out into the turn, and you're trying to turn, so you've got to put more pressure on the rein because you've created more acceleration and end up with more brace, if you know what I mean there. So I would actually just use the reins without legs until your horse is tracking and bending really nice with the reins. Don't worry about that hind foot stepping over a little further or anything like that. Just worry about that horse looking into its turn and coming around and letting go of a forward thought or a left thought if you want to go right. So the horse might be thinking left and you're wanting to go right, and that's what's causing a brace.
Okay.
Yeah. But you might have to go something softer.
Then you get the drop in the shoulder.
Yeah. So, and, yeah, but just...
And then everything turns into a two-thirds. But the straight lines have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Because the horse has got a direction to go, and then you suggest a turn. Oh, okay, I'll look over there. And it really works. It really helps.
Yeah. But to get a horse to learn how, like the way I sort of would explain it as a circle is a never-ending question. It's like, whereas a straight line and a corner and a new direction is, thank you, you found the new direction. There's the answer, okay? And the horse looks in a new direction, so they get more interested in the turns, where a circle, you know, they don't learn anything if they're not, you know, they're just going around and around and around, so they don't go, well, what was the purpose of bending? You know, so I say to a horse,
yep,
we're coming up to a corner. Thank you for looking around the corner. Look, new direction, new landscape. New interest, and the horse goes, oh, ka-chink, thank you. Go off in a new line, and then they get interested.
So you're looking at maybe, say, just doing a quarter circle with a bend and then going off for a straight line and then another quarter circle.
Yeah, something like that. And you got to spend a bit of time. There's something I do. I should name it something different, but I call it the circle of death. And I basically set up I draw a line in the sand, which is a circle, and I put somebody in it, and I say, this is a prison, and it's a prison that's got a fence all the way around it that's invisible, but if your horse's nose touches it, you explode. And it's one of those modern-day prisons. So you've got to protect your horse's nose from the fence, and you've got to go in one direction, and you can't kick and pull at the same time. So you've got to ask for go, and then the horse is going to go in a straight line, and then you've got to protect its nose. And that circle might only be 3 meters across, but you've got to survive inside that circle without touching the edge. And eventually, you overbend your horse a little, send it across the circle, and then you get to the other side and you'll nearly die because you're going to touch the electric fence, and then you turn again. But eventually, that horse will start to track a circle and start to walk around the edge of that invisible fence. And that's something that I do for really stuck braced horses, but I'd never do it on a Western performance horse that's been too bent, like one of the laterally bendy, like ones that are just really bendy flexy. That it wouldn't work on one of those horses, but on a horse that gets braced and locked up, it works quite well.
Yeah, he is definitely bracing, and he's trying to hold his head to the outside of the circle.
Yeah, well, don't do circles on him. Just new direction, thank you. New direction, thank you. Until he hooks on, that goes, oh, that's all I have to do, is it? Just go in a new direction. But there's a lot more in it, but it's very hard to sort of talk about it without showing you personally. But yeah, you know, sometimes I just teach horses to steer from a standstill, but in a nutshell, I'd say probably less circles, more new directions that mean something. And then I'd also say get out of the hard bosal and try something a little softer, so you can play with your rein positions and just help that horse learn to bend in something that may be similar to a bosal, like a holder, and then maybe move up to the bosal. But it'll just take a bit of time. I've got a few other questions. Well, what I'm going to do, I think, so Sue, do you have a question up here? I haven't seen one of your questions, but is there anything you guys wanted to talk about in particular? Any questions while you're up there, Helen and Sue? Or you just wanted to kind of...
Yeah, not really wanted to...
That's all right.
Oh, you go, Sue.
The only thing I was going to say is I've been really working on that leading rein, and I can't believe the difference in Marley since I went to your clinic. He's still really bendy, but I got a lot of benefit today out of watching the rebalancing video that you just put up. But the rebalancing today in that video showed me where he's bracing and using his neck to wobble at, which is what's happening at the clinic with you.
Oh, so that video might have been that big. Yeah. Okay, so that was lifting the rein. Was that the rebalancing when you lift the rein when they get a little stuck and then they kind of rebalance and then you try again? Yes. Yeah, it's very effective. You can get in. Some people get in a bit of a bind with it, but if you get it right, it works really well. Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm glad it helped.
It really helped. But we've still got a long way to go, but it's made a big difference with him. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, that's great.
To get on myself now.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's always the way. Well, I'll get through a few of these questions and then I'll put it up later for the people who couldn't make it, the ones who sent questions through for the group. And also, Helen, good on you. I hear you're going good with your little with your little Appy. So she's going good.
Yeah, I had a good ride on her the other day where she was just in my obstacles arena, and we started off and she just sort of cottoned onto the fence and followed the fence around. And then she goes, "Oh, I'm off." And she went right up to the other end.
Yeah.
And I managed to bring her back down to the yards where the other big ones, big horses were.
Yeah.
And then I guided her to the fence and she just went off again. And I thought, oh, this is all right. So I got off at the far end of the paddock. So we just walked back.
Yeah.
And today I took her into Violet Town, which is a little town up the road. And we did a walk through the township and round bits and pieces. I got her off the float and I wanted to just, I was going to long rein her. She was going really well in the long reining, but she just wasn't in the right frame of mind. So I thought I'll just lead her. But it took her about 20 minutes. But I realised afterwards that I wanted her to go off on her own, but she wasn't in the right frame of mind.
Yeah.
So she was quite anxious, and it wasn't until we sat down on a log and we just sat and she shook her whole body and her head and snorted and sneezed, and she goes, "Oh," and I thought, I reckon that was because she wanted me to be the leader because she was anxious, but I was asking her to go off on her own. So as soon as I became more of a leader for her, she goes, "Yep, that's right, I'm ready."
Yeah, sometimes they sometimes they get stuck they get stuck and go, well, I they not really sure what you want, and then after a while they go, well, can you give me some ideas? You know, they sometimes want those ideas, and otherwise they get a bit stuck and say, well, I've looked around now and I've done this and I'm a bit scared over there, but you know, and then you direct them again and it's good that you know that probably intervening was good. Because there are times you have to intervene.
Yeah, so it wasn't until, the difference was chalk and cheese. And after I got up and she'd relaxed, I go, oh, yeah, that's it. I just wasn't quite there for her, expecting her to go off because she's been there before.
Yeah.
And, of course, different day, different situation. And then she went down the main street, up into all the shops. She visited everybody, couldn't have cared less about anything.
That's cool.
It was really, really good.
So...
And I took her over to one of the local mountain trail obstacle courses. So she's been to Brenda's and this other one. And I didn't ride her over the course because it didn't feel right. But she just did it all in hand. And she would just. And I drove her. I've actually got photos of her long reining her all over the course.
So oh, that's great. No, that's good. That long reining, you know, I did a clinic just in Tarine. I'd probably did about four horses at the clinic. I got them long reining just because it makes so much difference. Easy to get them, easy to get them thinking and motor, you know, going, and then makes the riding part easy. Oh, good.
And I've also gone back just in the yards at night before I feed her, just asking for her. She braces when I ask her to bend left, not like a lateral flexion, but just even just picking up the left lead, and just she just goes. So I spent 10 minutes the other day just going right back to the bare bones. So because that's where it's showing up in the riding.
Some of those horses, and particularly after the last clinic watching her, and this would be sort of one that Letitia would be sort of interested in, because there are horses that have had a fair bit of riding, and the first part of the transitions, the brace, that first pick up of the rein, they kind of lock it out. And they kind of, some horses are young and they naturally do it. Other horses kind of did it a little bit. It never got addressed. And then the older horses that just, it's a habit just to block the rein out before you even, you know, have done anything. So, But no, if you keep working, go back to basics, get a look and then go somewhere with it. So take her for a little walk when she looks at you so she gets interested in following that rein.
Going back to ground. Work help with, you know, doing a lot more flexion on the ground.
Yeah, flexion is a pathway to a direction, okay? So if you get a little flex, I just get a horse to flick its ear, look, soften its eye, and then basically it's got to turn into a movement from there. I'm not a big fan of standing them still, bending them right round, because what happens is the bend gets deeper and deeper and deeper, but the front feet stay stucker and stucker and stuckerer.
Well, that's what I found, like with the groundwork, you know, if I get his head to come round, it's only happening through his neck. It's certainly not happening through his body.
Yeah, no,
he's as stiff as...
Yeah, no, I'm a big... I used to flex horses years ago more than I do now, and each year I sort of do it a little bit less now. Now the reins for me is all about how the horse rebalances through its whole body. Yeah, but anyway, I'll get through a few of the other questions that people have sent through, and it'll be just good stuff that you might find interesting for you guys, and then they can hook onto it later on. Mm-hmm. So I had Julian, Shireen. They both sent a question. I'll read both questions, because for those two people, when they come on board later, they're in a similar bracket. So Julie's question was, my young horse does not seem to want to connect with me. He's always looking elsewhere, but at me. When I ask him to do something, he obliges quite softly and willingly, but his mind always seems elsewhere. What can I do to engage him more? And then I'll go down to Serene's question, which is, what is the best way to establish relationship with your horse? I have a horse that is quiet, highly strung, and taking some time to desensitize him. He sometimes seems disinterested in me. I'm a beginner. I have an instructor to help me, but unfortunately, and I will say for Shireen, fortunately and unfortunately, I'd say, if the instructor's not letting her on because he feels he's till it's safe, I say that's a fortunate thing, because if he's got a fair feel on the horse, maybe safety first, and he tries to bite me when I'm grooming and saddling him. So both those horses, the first thing, so I'll start off with Julia's, and this will be the starting process of Shireen's horse, is when you stand with your horse, well, first of all, there's different spectrums, and you can't just work from one spectrum when you're educating a horse. You've got to work from two or three spectrums that you'll work from. So one side of the thing is the listening side, so that so us being aware and listening to our horses is very important, and but listening to your horse will help with training, but listening to your horse is not training. Listening to your horse is people training, not horse training. But by listening to your horse, you'll notice some big changes in your horse. So there will be a training benefit towards your horse. So what I mean by listening is, when you walk into your horse, when does it start to look away? Does it start to get tight? Does it start to, make funny expressions that show you that the horse is maybe getting anxious when you're walking up to it from a distance? It could be like 100 metres away or 50 metres that horse is starting to show funny signs of agitation, or the horse is starting to look away. In both those questions, I would say notice your horse a lot earlier when you're walking up to it. So when you start to walk down to your horse's paddock, deliberately turn off the rest of the world and be focused on what's happening with that horse when you're walking up to it. So at a distance, you might see that horse get a little, shift a little behind another horse or do something. Well, you'll notice that early, and you'll stop and take the pressure off and acknowledge that, that you saw your horse do something like that, and basically you'll approach your horse almost like a young horse, and that starts building up, that instead of flooding your horse and walking up to it and catching it and not listening to it, you're walking up to it, listening to it, so by the time you get to it, the horse is acknowledging it, so it starts to acknowledge you and become more interested in you. So that's one end of the spectrum that both those horses I'd be working on. The next side of it is the training side of it, is where we're sort of manipulating a situation to get a horse to make a change or seek a change. Okay, so that's training. So the first part of it is listening to your horse, which you can't be a horse trainer without listening to what the horse is telling you. So when you're with your horse, if your horse is in a habit and one's highly anxious, so Serene's is highly anxious, Julia's is always looking elsewhere. It could be a quiet sort of bit of a horse that just disconnects and looks elsewhere. It could be an anxious horse. Either way, basically I would interrupt that horse when it's looking away. It could be just a bang on the leg. It could be a pop of a flag on the ground or something, or on your leg or something. Don't put pressure on the horse to distract it. Don't sort of push it around to distract it, but just draw its thoughts across and just stand there very centered and quiet. And what I mean centered is horses like strength. They don't like flimsiness. They like strength in us being confident in ourselves. So you're grounded, you know where your spot is, that's your ground, I'm comfortable here. And if your horse is thinking things aren't okay, like the highly strung one is saying, you know, things aren't okay, well, you're not saying, okay, I'm here to help you. You are, you're saying I'm here to help you, but you're saying everything's okay. That's how you help, everything's okay. Okay, so if the horse says, oh, the world's going to end, you're going, well, no, it's not. I'm in a pretty good mood right now, and I was just thinking about how nice of a day it was. And that's the mood you present to your horse all the time. So you're not a psychologist sitting there going, are you okay? I'm going to help you, and I'm going to make you feel better, and I'm going to sing to you and all that, because that sometimes just brings it brings light to the anxiety, I suppose. Whereas all we want to do is distract the horse from thinking elsewhere. When the horse thinks towards us, they look at a nice, calm, centered person. So they go, oh, if it's anxiety that's making them look away, then they look there and go, oh, I like it here. But the closer you can get a horse's thoughts to their feet or to back to themselves, the more comfortable they'll be. So distract your horse, deliberately distract it. And then when it's looking your way, offer it a good, calm, strong person that's standing there nice and happy, ready to help it. So that's the things I do at clinics to help people. But so he's soft, so he's probably light. So when Julia says he obliges quite softly, I'd say he probably light. He's light, and he because if his mind's elsewhere, he's not soft. He's just quite light, and he's a sensitive horse. So he probably is the same as Serene's horse in the sense that most of these highly strung horses are usually fairly sensitive, and they become quite light to pressure, but they don't become soft because they're carrying too much anxiety. So to engage them...
Can I just interrupt?
Yep.
Oh, sorry. That really resonated with what happened to me today.
Yep.
With Tootsie on her walk. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, that's great. And with engaging the horses more, so once the horse is thinking your way, and because a lot of horses, and there's a few videos online, there's a few videos and even recent ones where I've got videos of me distracting a horse to get it centered, and there's just different ways that I do it. Some horses I might get a little big, sometimes it's just a step away or something like that. But once they're centered and they're thinking our way, I'm not the sort of person that waits there and lets them fully come all the way down to relaxation and get all gooey. I actually try and, while they're in the green zone, follow a feel. So for Julia, what can I do to engage him more? Once that horse is thinking her way and kind of interested, then I might just do a little leading lesson where I'll go somewhere and the horse will follow me, but also follow the feel of the lead that I'm presenting to it. And then the horse goes, oh, I'm thinking. So the idea... So distracting a horse and letting it relax is not education in the sense that you haven't taught it anything but to feel better with you and relax. So it is education, but it's not education in the sense that you haven't taught it any tools or pathways that you'll be using throughout the time with it, except for, hey, look at me and relax, I'm a good person. So what I say to people, you might have that working really good where you can distract your horse and relax it, but what you really want to do is say, why don't you, now you're thinking my way and you're not, you know, off your trolley looking over there, why don't you follow a feel towards me and stop right there and then relax a little. And then and I would start to teach the horse to follow a rein or follow, but, you know, what I mean a rein is a there's a lead rope or something like that and follow my feel or something like that. I might walk slowly, get the horse to walk slowly with me. I might pick up a little bit. But most of the lessons I do with distracted horses or horses that think away is I would not push them away. I draw them to me and let them follow me and follow my feel and get interested in what I'm doing. And make sure that when those horses are thinking your way, offer a hand somewhere, but don't shove it in their nose, but have it around there and see if they'll reach out and sniff on you before you put the halter on. So when I go back to the first part of the spectrum, listening to them when you catch them, make sure that they've sort of engaged with you when you've before you've put the halter on. So they're kind of thinking your way and interested in you when you catch them, and then things might start to change. And especially when I go down here to sort of Shireen's horse with the grooming and the biting and things like that, is the horse has probably been a bit snarly about things, and because it wasn't listened to, it's standing there going, I don't like this now, I don't like that either, that bit there. But if you start listening to your horse a little more when you're catching it, you might find some of that attitude might just dissipate a little bit. But some of it, if it's been there for a long time, it becomes a habit. So the last clinic, I had a horse that was, it gets nippy when you touch it on the back and really girthy. And I know the person's been listening to the horse's anxiety and girthing a little bit. And then when the horse gets a little bit anxious about it, it takes it off. And but she's been doing that for a long time, and it's the horse still doesn't let it touch her on the back. So I came in with a different angle and I said, well, let's just teach this horse to lead through the girth. So I put a belly rope on it and I said, can you lead? And then once she could follow the feel of that rope really softly, then we could scratch her on the back, and she went, oh, that's nice, I like that. And she finally let us touch her on the back, and she girthed up softly, purely because we gave her an alternative to that. So but first side of the spectrum, listen to them first, try that, just going, okay, I can see you getting anxious with the girth, I might take it away a little bit, and just see by listening to your horse if you can dissipate some of that angriness. And then if it's in there and you think it's a strong habit, then maybe do things like, you know, give it an alternative to that. So sometimes if a horse is if I know when I'm going to girth it up, it's going to get angry, I might distract it a little first, and it might go, oh, what's that? And then I put a little feel on it, and then you might find sometimes it's only when they're thinking about what's happening on their belly really strong that they go, oh yeah, I really don't like that. But I've seen plenty of horses that want to bite their owner, and then a horse walks past and they look at the horse as it goes past, not wanting to bite their owner while they're girth, where they're still girthing the horse. And then when the horse, you know, goes off a bit, they go back, oh, that's right, I'm back here again, aren't I? And that kind of proves to me that the horse wasn't in a lot of pain, and it wasn't really that angry about it. If it was, it wouldn't have looked at the other horse just walk past or just get a little distracted out there. So some horses, it's become a habit. So with those ones, you offer them an alternative, and that's education. So if it's a horse that's girthy around the barrel and brushing and things like that, then I might put a belly rope on it and just... I might pull the belly rope forward and just get the horse to lead with it until I can walk off, put a bit of pressure on the belly rope, and the horse leads. And then you might say, Shireen, you might say, okay, well, if I do that, then the horse won't stand when I girth it. Well, then I'd say, well, then when your horse is walking, put a belly rope pressure on it and then teach it to stand, stop. So once you've led your horse off with the belly rope, you lead your horse, you pull the belly rope again, so you loosen it once the horse walks, obviously. And then you might step in a position where the horse walks past you a little bit, and then you pull the belly rope on, and then the horse goes, oh, there's the belly rope, and you just stand your feet solid and say, well, I'm standing, keep the belly rope on. And then if the horse doesn't respond to it, you might put a little feel in the lead rope, and then when the horse stops, you go, take the pressure off. So, and because horses all go forward to a lead rope and stop to a lead rope, don't they? So there's no reason they can't go forward to a belly rope and stop to a belly rope. It's just another nose around their belly. You just got to think of it like that. And once a horse can follow a soft feel around an area where it was usually sensitive, then it starts to go, oh, I got an alternative, I'll relax, and then they get better. So, because some horses, you know, as people know, you put a halter on them and they're sensitive to pressure for the first time. So imagine a girth as a halter. I'm just going to teach you to follow a feel with a belly rope and a girth, and then once you're soft with it, then I can girth you up quietly. So you can add that into that. So now that's, I think I'll keep that on those questions. And Kate's got a good one. My horse bucks and pulls and carries on when lunging in the canter. Now, this is an interesting one, because the hardest thing I have on one of these talks is I don't know how the people are training their horses. Only the people I know that have come to my clinic or have done a bit with me or watched me know my philosophy in not pushing horses. So when I see the word lunging, I automatically think pushing energy into a horse and sending it around on a circle. So if I automatically think that, now Kate, you may not be doing that. You may not be pushing your horse on a circle. You may be having certain ways of lunging your horse, but if you are using driving energy to send your horse out, it generally puts a bad feel in your horse, okay? Because driving energy, in a lot of cases to a horse, feels like a horse pushing them away down the pecking order. And if people watch horses, the horse that pushes in on a horse, basically the horse getting pushed away never looks happy, does it? There's always it's an altercation. Horses and humans, some humans do like altercations and they sort of thrive on it, but 99% of people generally just like life to be pretty happy. They don't like getting in confrontation all the time with other people, and horses don't like strong confrontation all the time. So you don't want to be pushing your horse away. And lunging is one of those common things where people push it this way and then they push it that way, and the horses, all that anxiety comes out through them. So I'll go on with the question. He also does this under saddle, and I am now scared to canter as bucking frightens me. Transition. Okay, this is where we're going to get into transition. On the lunge, when I ask for canter, he explodes and then eventually stops and stands still, even if I am pushing on him. There you go. Even if I'm pushing on him. So there is pushing in there to get him going. What can I do to improve this? I'm working with a body worker and a massage therapist, and I don't work him with a saddle at the moment as it doesn't fit, and I don't want to cause him pain. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to explain a little bit, and it's not easy. The way I teach people to train sometimes is harder than the way they've been taught, purely because I believe some of the way people have been taught is through cutting corners. So what I mean by cutting a corner is offering a feel on a horse to go out to the left, and then the horse didn't listen to the feel of the rein and it didn't follow the feel, so we just get a lunging whip or a flag and we kind of chase it out. It's almost saying, can you follow a feel? And the horse says no, and then you go, oh, well, I'll push you out anyway. So the horse never learned to follow a feel. It just learned to move away from pressure. So I think we should commit to more to our first question. So it's like teaching a kid at school. When we ask a question, we stick to the question. We maybe highlight the question till the student understands it. So asking a horse to go and then pushing it when it doesn't, it's not highlighting the question, it's asking a completely new question. So highlighting a question might be stepping into that lead rope a little firmer and saying, well, maybe I'm going to take the lead rope through there and see if you can follow out there, not chase it with a stick, because chasing with a stick would be a completely different question. One's move away from pressure, one's move towards your thoughts. So easier said than done. But specifically on lunging, if your horse already can go out and around, a lesson I really like doing, and you can set this lesson up so it's easier for yourself. What I mean easier for yourself, you walk forwards instead of walking backwards, because sometimes when you're on a lunge, you might be stepping facing your horse and then sending it out. It's just like you get your horse up and you lead it beside you like this, out as wide as you can put your arm. And then you just lead it, and then you'll feel a brace when it, you know, a lot of horses, you feel a brace when the eye gets like it's going to go past you, and you'll feel it lock up a little there, and you just hang in there till it loosens, until you can lead your horse's eye past you like that. And you do that on both sides till your horse floats by like that. And then what you do is you just step up your walk a little bit, and your horse will lean a little bit. You hang onto that lean until your horse loosens up and travels through a little bit, until your horse frees up. And after a while, what you do, you have this hand ready with that spare rope, and when that horse frees up and goes past, you just let that rope out and say, why don't you travel? And that horse will just travel past. So I imagine that I'm just gently I'm not throwing the dart through when the horse is really braced because it's too heavy. It's like a big spear that I can't pick up. It's like trying to get a 1-year-old to pick up a 10-kilo spear and throw it. You got to wait till your horse really loosens up in that leading lesson on both sides, and then after a while you'll just be able to just float them through. And then when your horse is really good, and it'll float through, and then it'll go out like it's on a circle. And then, because you'll stand there and let the horse travel around you a little. And then I put a little sort of task in there, which is when I push my hand forward with the feel of that lead rope, I would like your eye and your shoulder to pass that leading hand. If you don't, I can shorten up and push until you pass me. So the shoulder goes past that leading hand, or at least up to that leading hand. So every time you lift your leading hand, the horse is trying to get past it with its eye. And what will happen is you'll be able to get that horse out at a distance, and it'll be able to, and you'll be standing in a circle, and you'll lift your leading hand, but it's still at a position that you're leading on that side, not like that. That's lunging, that's leading. After a while, you'll be able to do it from here once your horse is soft. But I just get him to sort of lead by and trot out, and lead by and trot out, until I can step up my energy, put my leading hand up, and that horse will go, next transition, canter. And I'll canter. So I've taken away the drive completely, and I've put a lot of work in leading. You're not going to get it on the first day. Sometimes you might get it on the second or third day, but work on really good. I lift my leading hand, the horse lifts and travels. And after a while, what the horse sees is you're also lifting your energy, but your energy and your thoughts are intended to the direction that you're going, not directing into your horse to ping it out that way. Because if you're directing into your horse to ping it that way, the horse is going to go, oh, alpha horse, buck kick, none off, you know, and have a bit of a spit the dummy like it sounds like it's having. So you're leading your horse around, and that's what you want to do. It's a little hard, but it's a very good lesson. And on the online subscription, if you're interested, I don't know if you're on, I don't know who's on, off, whatever, but it is $15 a month, and if you wanted to, you only have to go on for a month, and there's a heap of videos, and there's a couple in there that there's one particular one where I'm actually doing that with a horse that gets a bit grumpy when I lead it, a little buckskin horse, and it's just me kind of getting it to lead, and then the student getting it to lead out and canter on a circle. But for that $15, you know, you can just watch it for the month and watch a lot of other videos, and then you know, it's one of those things, it's an on-off thing, you can tap out or tap in anytime you want. But there is stuff on there that could be helpful, because it's very hard to explain it, because it is a little intricate. Now, when you get to riding him, basically work on the accelerator down low. So acceleration is something I work on at a walk. Lots of acceleration at a walk. Can you walk really slow? Can I? And I work on the accelerator through my heels, not so much through my seat, because a lot of horses go, oh yeah, I'll move off your seat, because I've always hated heels, because the last trainer just kicked me in the guts with the spurs. So I always shift off the seat, but they always shift with it with anxiety. So I actually say I don't own a seat, I've just got heels, they don't have spurs on them, they're just a pair of heels that are going to touch your ribs. And I work on that until the horse is really soft with my heels and walking fast and slow and fast and slow, and I can actually make it go right up to a fast walk quite quickly or right up to a fast walk quite slowly, depending on how much pressure I put on my heels, and that horse likes it. When that horse starts to like your heels again, then all of a sudden it goes, oh, heels aren't just there to chase me if I don't listen to the seat. So then maybe down the track, once the heels work, well, you can own a seat again and all that sort of fancy stuff. But a lot of horses, they brace as soon as you shift your seat, because they know what was coming, or in the past what was coming. So you always work from the outside in before you work from the inside out. So what I mean by the outside in is you're working with your heels first opposed to your core. You know, because a lot of people say, you're lifting your seat and you imagine forward, and then your horse doesn't go forward, so you do something else in your seat, and then you goes down your lower leg, and eventually you get to your poor old heel. Well, I say no, start at the heel, because when you get to the heel, it's got to work. Otherwise, what was the point of going to the heel in the first place when you used your core first? So I say start with the heel, get the heel right, and then you can go do the fancy stuff that prior to the heel. And once your horse is good at that acceleration in the walk, then you let it dribble out into trot. And then once you know what you get when you put your heels on, then you can experiment with a little more heel and know that your horse can go to canter. So that's working on the accelerator. But what I would also do before you try and use your heels to go to canter, if you haven't done it for a while and your horse does have a bit of explosion, is I would actually work on a trotting transition. So what I work on is I imagine that the horse is, I find the horse's most comfortable trot, and I say, that's my platform. So the platform is the horse the trot likes, not the trot you like, but the horse the trot. And most horses find a trot in their calm environment that they sort of stay in, that's their trot. Some horses have two steps above and two steps below. Some horses are at the top step. Some horses are at the bottom step. Some only have two steps in the trot. They'll go up a step and canter, or they'll go down a step and just fall into a walk, and they don't have much in there. But what you do is you step on that platform that's their trot, and you trot, rise trot with that platform for a while, just on a loose rein, until you and them are together at their trot, trotting. And after a while you go, okay, well, I'm going to go up a step. My battery's running low, and I don't know where the charging plug is. Anyway, I'll get through a few questions and see how we go. So once you've got that platform, you step up a step, and then back to the platform, back to the one you're in. And then you might go down a step, back to the platform, up a step. And when your horse is starting to feel like it's going up a step with you, so you rise up a little faster and the horse comes up, not too fast, just a little bit. And then when your horse is following your steps, you just go up a step, up a step, up a step, and your horse will go, I can't keep up, I might just canter. So you've actually used that trotting rhythm to get your horse to full trot, and then it'll fall into a canter. It's not going to be some burp, you know, but it'll mean that you didn't have to kick your horse to canter, and it might just go, oh, I just feel like cantering because I can't trot any faster. Problem with that is your horse might have a 50 kilometer an hour trot, which means when it gets to canter, it's probably going to be a gallop. So if it's one of those horses, that's probably not the best thing. But if it's a horse that gets to the highest trot and it's only maybe 20 kilometers an hour, well, you could probably go into a canter or maybe something like that. But so that helps them. But don't only do that to get a few canters to show your horse that you can get into a canter and you're not going to die. And if you've worked on the legs separately, that the heels work, the horse is comfortable, and you've let that horse fall into a canter, well, your next stage is now I'm going to get you into a slow jog, and I'm going to squeeze to canter, because I've used my heels so much now and you understand them so much that I reckon if I squeeze with this much pressure, you're going to canter. And the horse goes, yeah, I will if you squeeze with that much, because you've worked on so many leg transitions. And that's how I'd answer that question. So yeah, I'm trying to... That was Kate. Oh, this is an interesting, Deanna. My thoughts on keeping the enthusiasm going to keep working with your horse. Life often brings in situations that gave us much more time and motivation. That's an interesting one, because I've over the years struggled with motivation with horses, because I've basically spent my life as a helper of horses. Horses haven't been a hobby for me so much so as they've been a life and a job. So motivation has always been a little hard, in the sense when you've been working so hard, working with everyone's horses and all that all the time, you sort of just lose interest in your own. But motivation is something that's very hard, and life gets in the way. But basically, you've got to... The thing that I did for me is say, I'm here to help. And once you can see the positive in everything, so first of all, you've got to go out and like your horse. If you like your horse, then that'll give you motivation. So if that means you go out and sit in the paddock and just observe your horse and turn off the other things and just let it come up to you and nuzzle into you, and you just give it a rub and maybe scratch it and do the things that it might like for a bit, you might notice that, oh, geez, you know, just going out and hanging with my horse is not too bad. And then you get a bit of interest, then you might go and try something else. But if you go out thinking, I've got to ride my horse today and I know I've got to do this because otherwise it's going to get whatever, and then you have a bad ride, then you just lose interest very quickly. So go out there. The only way I ever kept interested in horses was I had to take away any goals, anything that I wanted to achieve, and I had to go out there and go, what's today going to bring? And go out there thinking, I'm excited because I don't know what's going to happen. And just go out and make, you know, just imagine you're going out there for a short bit of time just to do something, and you don't have a goal, you don't have any pre Anything that you think you were going to do, or don't even think about the horse you had yesterday. If that was a bad day, the horse you had last time, just go out there completely new, and if you want to, just say to yourself, "This is not my horse. Someone's my friend's desperate for help, and they've lent me this horse just to see if I can help this horse feel better." If that's how you can do it, like some people come to a clinic and they're so weighed down by their own horse, I just say reset. And you don't own this horse. You just lent this horse because your horse is lame at home for this clinic and someone loaned it to you, and you're just going to try your best to figure out this horse. And I would just take that and try and there's all these other things that I can't help you with, but that's what I do for myself to keep me motivated as I go back into neutral and say, I'm just here to help this horse, and it looks like a nice horse, and I don't know what's going to happen next, but let's just see what happens when I walk up to it. Oh, wow, it looked at me. Thanks, great. And I just start fresh like that and just have a small session that kind of we all feel good about, and then build from there again. But interesting, not a question I get asked very often, so there's probably a lot more answers in there, but that's the way I kind of do it for myself. But so... Yeah, Christine has got a nippy horse. He's a bit on the nippy side. When I ask a tad more than normal, he becomes a bit of a bully. It's a little hard, that question. I'm not going to answer it, Christine, because I'd like to, but I don't know what a bit more is. A bit more leg, a bit more anything, a bit more, you know, am I, and if you're on board here, I could sort of get the answer off you, but because it's a bit, it's not quite specific enough for now, I'd only be clutching at straws, but some of the other answers that you've heard me answer will probably help out with him anyway with that sort of stuff.